Steve, thanks. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hi. I like to consider myself, for the most part, positive-minded. Wouldn't you say? You've known me a long time. I'm mostly positive-minded, right?
For the most part. You're pretty positive. Yeah. I will give you that.
I am. I like to think so.
Just like me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect description.
That's why there's yin and yang in life, my friend.
So every once in a while, I'll hear what sounds like good news, but then I'll say to myself, uh-oh, it sounds like good news, but could it be good news? We have followed the story about this Lucas Museum for months and months and months, and then they make an announcement today that the Friends of the Park is backing off, and maybe
they're temporarily delaying their lawsuit.
That's the way it's worded, right. They're temporarily delaying their lawsuit.
So they can have a discussion one-on-one and more up close and personal.
So I don't know if it's because we live here in Chicago where sometimes things are done in a shady way. But I say to myself, yes.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. So I say to myself, there's something going on, right? I don't know what's going on, but something's going on. And then I also say to myself, and this is the worst part of this, Wendy. This is the worst part of this at all. I say to myself, if I'm the Lucas Museum, I build that thing today.
Well,
I get the guys out there and I break ground and I build it today. I want it done by 8 o'clock tonight.
I have to say, I love when we think alike, and we do similarly.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts are usually funnier, but same concept. And I thought that too. When I heard it's delayed, get the bulldozers out there right now when there's no turning back.
Do you remember when they tore down Migs Field in the middle of the night? Like, it was out of nowhere. We had Migs Field,
those
one of our nation's
just
most beautiful.
XOs to say, I love you, Chicago, from Mayor Daley.
But it proves that things can be done very quickly if you need to do something quickly. So get the guys that knocked down Migs Field. It took them an hour and a half to just totally level the airport. Get those guys and make them build the Lucas Museum.
A ukulele museum, that's what I would like.
I would love to have a ukulele museum. That would be
dedicated to Iz, Kaliakalaka Lokomoko.
Yes. But get that museum built today before the Friends of the Park realizes what hits them.
You know, when we had Ted Cox on last week from DNAinfo.com, I said, you know, why don't you just get the bulldozers out there in the middle of the night? And he chuckled, but it could work.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works. So what do you think is on their agenda to all of a sudden go, all right, I know we've been fighting this, but for a little while anyway, we'll hold back and see what you got.
I think Ted Cox dropped a bombshell when he said how Mayor Daley, I'm going back to that.
Mayor Emanuel.
Yes. Rahm Emanuel wanted to do the whole McCormick Place thing and tear that down. And I don't know if this was off the air or on the air, but Ted and you and I were discussing that what they're thinking now is let George Lucas build his Lucas Museum of Narrative Art where he wanted it and then tear down the old antiquated part of McCormick Place and make that parkland. So
wouldn't
then it's like
something?
A win-win. And I'll bet you that caught the attention of the Friends of the Park.
I wonder
and they're going to get
that's
a park.
What it is. I
but who pays
if that's
for the tear down of the McCormick
yeah,
Place?
Yeah, that's one of the sticking points, isn't it?
I know we have money in the budget for it.
Sure, there's plenty of money. Don't worry. There has to be, if you're the Friends of the Park, there has to be some incentive on your side for you to even bend a little bit.
They just want.
What is it? There's got to be something there. I just can't figure out what it is.
Listen, I respect what they're doing where they want to preserve the absolute beauty of Chicago's lakefront.
Absolutely.
But there is a way to add things that will build the economy here in Chicago as well as keep the lakefront beautiful.
Sure. I agree.
So I think they're talking because this thing's been in the courts for 2 years.
You know what? I said, again, when Ted Cox was here, and that's 2 weeks ago, I think, that he
was.
That
was last week.
Was it last week? Whenever he was here, I talked about how fortunate we are in Chicago that just because of the planning, the way the city is built, they haven't used up all the lakefront. We can see it. We can drive up and down Lakeshore Drive north of the city and south of the city, and we get tremendous views of the lake for miles and miles and miles. And a lot of cities would have done it differently. But we've got that. And somebody sent me a note saying essentially, yeah, but every bit we take away, it'll set a bad precedent because then somebody else will go, well, you let the Lucas Museum do it. We want to do it too. And then in 50 years or 100 years, it'll all be completely covered. But I don't think so.
No, plus we'll be dead. Who cares?
Right, there's that too.
Second right. of all, it's going to be in the museum campus, so there's already yeah. a bit of an obstructed view
yeah.
of the lake in the museum campus.
Right.
It's a perfect addition.
I don't think that once they added the museum that other companies would all of a sudden say, oh, well, you let them in, you got to let us in too. I can't imagine that happening.
Are you kidding me? Martin Scorsese wants to open up his museum.
Right. I would like to
see
that.
Who are some other directors? Throw them out
there. The Tyler Perry Museum.
Oh, God.
Where you could bring your dad and have him dress up like a woman and take a picture and send it out to relatives. That would be fun.
Said no one.
Said not a single person ever. Although, really quickly, did you see what they're doing on Navy Pier? They're putting a big, giant hotel on Navy Pier.
That's a smart move.
I think that's a really smart move.
Sincerely.
And they don't even know whose hotel it's going to be. They just announced that they're making it okay for some hotel chain to put a giant hotel on Navy Pier. That's going to be beautiful.
It is going to be pretty cool.
I saw pictures of it on Sunday. One of the news, one of the 10 o'clock news shows showed what it'll look like. It looks gorgeous.
Is it going to
really
be tall
pretty.
And obstruct the view of the lake?
No. It'll fit right in. I mean, according to the picture anyway. So there's some progress. So congrats, Friends of the Park. Congrats, Lucas Museum. We're hoping finally there's some accord here.
But get the bulldozers out.
Get it out today.
Like now.
Do
they should
it
be
right
out now.
Now. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Oh.
I do. Is it Phil Collins?
Yep.
It is. Phil Collins and Frida. I thought that was their best collaboration of all time.
Bill, I think it was their only one.
It was their only and their
best.
And
where is she now?
I don't know where Frida is right now.
We got to do a where are they now thing.
All right.
Especially
I'm
with
in.
The Rock and Rollers, because I was looking at some pictures. God, I get sucked into these slideshows. And you can see, you've mentioned it before, it's like, what young actor do you not know is dead?
Mm-hmm.
And then
they show you a picture of somebody who's not dead.
I know.
You go, that's the kid from Two and a Half Men, and I know he's not dead. You can't show me his picture.
I know, it's ridiculous. So today it was like, what rockers look like now?
Mm-hmm.
And they had Joan Jett on there. And
how does Joan Jett look?
Just older.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
The biggest change, God Lover, Grace Slick.
Yeah. How would you describe Grace Slick?
I'm going to have
to think
about this. I let's just, well, she had
you wouldn't recognize her. Is that safe to say? If you didn't know it was Grace Slick you were looking at, she looks dramatically different.
Grace Slick is older. She had a great quote that said, when rockers hit the age of 50, they should retire and go away.
Oh,
and she did.
Well, she did, but very few others follow suit. You
and
know?
I'm okay with that because I like to see the dinosaur rockers out there. I do because it brings me back to a great time when I was
right.
not a dinosaur.
Right.
I was
right.
a little hatchling.
But I bet, like, if you look at the classics of rock and roll, I bet more of them continue to work after 50 than just go, oh, this is I had my day in the sun. This is not for me anymore.
Well, maybe she made more money than the other people, because I do know that when we went to Hawaii, we're just walking down the street in Lahaina, and all of a sudden we see a Grace Slick art gallery. So we walked in, and Grace Slick was just sitting there.
Really?
It was really cool.
That's nice.
That must have been like a showing that she was there, but... she looked older. There's a picture I saw that I didn't see the cartoon that you kind of likened her to, but that's kind of what it looked like.
Well, she looks a little like Ursula from The Little Mermaid now. If you were to put those pictures next to each other, you would see what I mean. It doesn't look like the Grace Slick that we all grew up, but you wouldn't recognize her.
But, you know, when I don't know how old she is, but when we're that old, don't look at me.
All right.
Okay.
All right, that's fair. All right. That's not bad at all. Frank is a caller who had, we were just talking about the fact that there's going to be a big hotel on Navy Pier. I want to say it's going to open in 2018. I know they're breaking ground on it in the next few months, I think, but the scheduled opening date is until 2018. To me, it seems like a good idea, and I saw the artist rendering of what it'll look like when it's finished. It looks beautiful to me, but Frank, you see otherwise, huh?
Yeah, Bill, if you had a little ranch home somewhere in the city and decided to build a 5-story addition on it, an architect may tell you, you know, the foundation isn't built to support a 5-story home.
The pier's going to cave in?
On Navy Pier, that whole Navy Pier is built upon wooden pylons.
Right.
Now, I would guess that if this same hotel were to be built on ground, it would have a nice, solid, concrete foundation going down pretty far.
Yeah.
And there is no groundbreaking on Navy Pier. You know, you puncture through the concrete bed and you get water. And what's supporting the whole mile-long or half-mile-long pier is hundreds, if not thousands, of wooden poles sunk into the lake bed. So I'm just wondering, you know, a bigger Ferris wheel, a bigger this, a bigger that, a 200-room hotel, you know, when is the camel's back going to break?
So your concern more than anything is just structurally if the pier could support it. That's
don't that's you think they checked that out? I mean, I wouldn't imagine they want it to cave in.
Look who our mayor is. Come on. He wants to see his name up on there just like Trump's name was. I think somebody ought to do some serious architectural digging here and see. I mean, that pier has been there for 100 years with wooden poles holding it up.
That's a good point.
I remember when it was a working pier, and there were no tall structures on there. You could actually ride your bicycles out there and be the only person out there. Now, it's like a whole town out there built upon wooden pylons. I mean, I'm not an engineer, I'm not an architect, but it just seems foolish to keep building up and up and up with more and more weight on wooden pylons.
Frank, you're the only person I've known so far anyway who's brought this up, but I have to think, as Wendy said, with so much at stake, they would do their research and make sure that the pier could support it before they'd build anything
else, I would hope. They already called Julie before they dig.
No, Julie doesn't have anything.
I know, it was a joke, Frank.
I know.
Not a funny one.
Our downtown tunnels flooded, remember?
Yeah.
Somebody didn't do their homework.
Right.
All kinds of stuff happened. And I'm not saying it's imminent. I'm just saying let's be prudent and have somebody put on paper that those wood pylons are actually going to be there in 100 years.
All right, we're going to mark this down. Frank, caller Frank, May 3rd. 2016, and we're going to see if this is not addressed sometime soon.
It would. I'm telling you, there's so much at stake here. They would have to do some research and make sure it's safe. But Frank, you bring up great points. You really do. Thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome, Bill. Wendy,
take care.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. God, I hope they thought of that because it's true.
You'd have to.
All right, so Chicago in 2015 set a record for domestic tourism, drawing 50.97 million visitors.
Yeah, and that's our number one tourist attraction. You know that, right?
It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
I don't. More than 8 million people visit Navy Pier annually. It's billed as the top attended leisure destination in the entire Midwest.
Right. It's the bubblegum shrimp, Steve. People love the bubblegum shrimp.
I think that's misleading because people come to Chicago, and then when you come to Chicago, that's one of the things that most people do.
Right.
I don't think that counts.
I understand, but I mean, I don't think people are sitting in Provo, Utah, saying, let's go to Navy Pier.
Right.
They're saying, let's go to Chicago. And then they get here and they're like, okay, what are we going to do? Well, you got to go to Navy Pier.
Well, I am so lame because, I mean, I've been there for events and things. Yeah. And I throw up on a Ferris wheel, so I haven't done that. But Navy Pier, we all know, was a naval training facility during World War II. Mm-hmm. Afterward, it served as a branch of the University of Illinois. After years of neglect, it was transformed into one of Chicago's top tourist destinations. But isn't there like a museum and everything? Like, I really should go check that out because it's pretty fascinating the more and more I hear about Navy Pier's history.
It's strange. They always say they want to do things to get Chicagoans to make it more part of their activity. You know, we get tremendous support from people from other places who are touring and they go there, but your average Chicagoan doesn't spend much time there. And for me anyway, they don't really have any anchors there for me. You know, there's no big department store. Not that that's what they need to turn things around, but I've been there a couple times. I like it. I don't not like it.
But there's some convention I go to there, and I can't remember what's there.
Well, the flower show used to be there. I don't know if it still is, and that was nice, but...
And the hotel you speak of, Bill, a 200-room hotel will be built, first-ever hotel at the pier. Mayor Rahm Emanuel's office announced it on Sunday. The project will cost about $90 million, will not utilize taxpayer funds. That's his, like, go-to line, isn't it?
Well, I think he uses that often because for the average person who hears his story, they go, oh, great, more money out of my pocket. But that they use it a lot because it's their way of saying, hey, don't worry, this won't cost you. This is on us.
It is construction is expected to begin in 2017 and open in late 2018. 5-story hotel, so it's not going to be tall to obstruct
right.
the view, as you mentioned.
Right.
Will be built on the east end of the pier next to Festival Hall, overlooking Navy Pier South Dock and providing guests with spectacular views of the city, Lake Michigan, and the pier.
They showed the views of what the views will be, and that is amazing. I mean, the look that you would get from those hotel rooms would be spectacular.
And the architect, Jackie Koo, of
is this,
Koo,
is this
K-O-O.
From Koo? Yeah.
His I don't know if it's a man or woman. I don't know. Jackie could be either. Whose portfolio includes the Witt Hotel and other commercial and residential properties, has a preliminary design put together.
Yeah.
And the Witt's pretty cool looking. So,
yeah.
Manuel said it will create 300 construction jobs, 200 permanent jobs. And it's part of Navy Pier's Centennial Vision, a plan for the redevelopment and a reimagination of the 100-year-old pier.
And you see pictures of it. It looks good, doesn't it?
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It is a Tuesday. It's a Tech Tuesday, and we're all very appy. Not happy, appy.
What does that mean?
It means, do you have one app on your phone at all?
I do not.
Do you know what an app is?
Yeah, I know what they are.
You know what app's short for?
Application.
Ding, ding. He's learning, Kevin.
Shocking, huh?
Well, we've got Bridget Carey coming up in a couple of minutes here for our Tech Tuesday. But some news and a real-life story that ties into it. There is a new app in San Francisco that happened yesterday. It's a smartphone app called Filled, F-I-L-L-D.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is they dispatch drivers with pickup trucks that are loaded with gasoline. When you run out of gas or if you're running low on fuel, the app user will set your exact location, choose a delivery window, and just release their gas flap. And then like right now, I'm under a quarter of a tank.
Yeah.
So if the app was happening here or happening.
Yeah.
I could turn my mic on. I could just put in my location, leave my gas cap open, and by the time we get out at 3 o'clock,
it would
be filled.
That's a miracle.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. That's a miracle. Do they charge? Well, I'm trying to figure out what the price on something like that would be. It's got to be a high end. Right?
Well, you leave your gas flap open. A driver arrives in a small truck, pops open the gas tank, fills it with regular premium that you have decided on the app. Filled charges per gallon rates comparable to nearby stations and tax on a slight delivery fee.
That's not bad at all.
No, and if you're desperate, because I think about this, like if what do you do when you run out of gas? I almost did this last Friday. I was driving home and the light came on pretty much the minute I got in my car out of the parking lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, then you're wondering, I know I have a few miles when the light comes on.
Right.
But how many miles? And it's different in every car, and my gas tank isn't that big. So I was panicking the whole way home.
Yeah, sure.
And stopped in when I was getting to, on the 290 Eisenhower heading out, I got off at Austin because I thought there's no way I'm going to make it home.
Yeah.
And I panicked.
Have you ever
no.
completely? I have five times.
Are
finally.
You?
Five times I've run out of gas.
There should be one time.
I know.
What do you do? Do you have, because we're AAA, so you call AAA and they would just come.
It's been different every time.
Five times?
Yeah, in
recently?
My lifetime. No, the last one was several years ago. The last one was you and I were working at another radio station on separate shows, and there's a news guy, Jim Johnson, who did news, and he was right behind me, and I said, Jim, I'm really low on gas. Keep an eye on me because I'm not positive I can make it to the gas station. He said, not a problem. And he was right behind me, and my car ran out of gas, and it was so cold. It was January. It was below zero. And it took about an hour and a half. They had to come. I walked to the closest gas station, and they sent somebody back with me to fill the car up with gas. But he said to me the next day, he goes, you were right. Your car did not make it. I said, well, your job in that
equation
was to help me.
Or at
he goes, you didn't say that part. You said, just follow you.
Excuse me, he couldn't drive you to the gas station and then say you're on your own?
It hurt me more. I knew that I was stupid in running out of gas. I understand that. I was running late for work that day. I didn't have time to get gas. All day long, I'm thinking about it.
I know.
Am I going to get to the gas? I don't know that I will. And I said to him, help me out, because we drove home the same way. He lived fairly close to me. Absolutely, I can follow you.
Well, this was going home?
Yeah.
Why didn't you stop in the city and buy gas?
I tried to. I couldn't get to the closest gas station.
You were on fumes, buddy.
I just barely. But he said, boy, you nailed it. You were right. You didn't have enough gas.
What have you learned? Don't trust Jim Johnson.
I don't talk to him anymore.
Good for you.
We're no longer friends.
And then yesterday on my way home, I was waiting for a stoplight, and I noticed this cute little Jeep Wrangler in front of me, and it's got the, I always think it's cute to have the tire on the back with the cover.
Sure.
And on top of the tire were two gas containers, two plastic red. I looked at them. I said, God, those look like two gas containers squared off, sitting, one and one right below it. And they were adhered to the wheel, the spare tire.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that gasoline? So I pull up and it says gasoline. And then there was a little sticker on his back window that said fire extinguisher on board. So then I thought, who does that? I mean, Bill Left
just
should have
case.
That.
Yeah, I should have that at all times.
Well, then I see that this app Filled comes out, but it's supposedly only in San Francisco. And then I'm thinking, is that like if you call AAA and you've run out of gas, is that how they transport the gas to your car to fill it up?
One of the five times that I was out of gas, I was a member of AAA, and they did. They had some sort of a thing in their back trunk that was like a giant container of gas, and he set up a tube and gave me gas, and that was it. I was in.
But this was weirder.
Johnson was there that day, too. On four out of the five, Wendy, Jim Johnson was there to witness it and not help me out.
Well, I just wondered, because I know it's not safe. I get nervous when I have to go get gas for the lawnmower, and I put it in the trunk, and I'm still, like, 10
yeah.
and 2 position, like, God, I hope I don't get into an accident.
I know, because you go up in flames.
Yeah, and now if I rear-ended this Jeep, wouldn't
right.
that explode?
Oh, yeah.
It was just the plastic containers.
I would think so. There's got to be a very safe way to transport it in a situation like that. I wouldn't keep it up like they did by the tire. There must
be
some.
Yeah, I mean, it was on, like, so you have the spare tire on the outside of the car, and then this was on the outside of the tire.
Yeah.
But it was clearly labeled, and you could tell it was gas, and I was reassured when I saw fire extinguisher on board.
Forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't know this. I know how airplanes have a reserve tank of gas. Couldn't they somehow outfit a truck or a van to have a reserve tank of gas just for that purpose? They could, couldn't they? Or maybe that already exists.
I bet it already exists.
It must.
But I just thought that was kind of dangerous, and I had never seen that before.
Yeah.
And I wondered if it was part of this app, because it's so weird. Yesterday I saw it. Today I hear about Filled.
Yeah.
But that's just in San Francisco. And
we need it here for me. Please.
I can't believe five times.
Five times over the years, yeah. One was a rental car. I was in Florida, and I was used to, like you said, once it gets to E, you go, well, I still have 12 miles. I still have 15 miles. Well, in this particular rental car, as soon as it got to E, like
stopped.
The second it got to E, gone.
Did it just start
no
coughing, and that's
just,
how it started?
Everything shut off. It's like the second it got to E, I was driving on the highway.
No
it
sputtering?
Just stopped. No, it just stopped.
Because with the lawnmower, you're supposed to let it run out of gas the last time of the season because you don't want to store it with gas in it.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for it because it's just
right.
it's just sputtering until it runs out of gas. A car's not like that,
no,
huh?
No, it's just turned right off. And Terry had said to me, because I said, I'm really low on gas. And she said, how low? And I said, well, you always get that extra 12 or 15 miles, so I'm not panicked.
See, if the light's on, I panic. And I try to keep it half and above all the time.
You should.
I know in winter that's better, but right. I just, because I don't like to get stuck, but I was running late this morning, so I still have a quarter. That's
you'll
okay.
You'll be all right.
No
you'll
light coming
fine.
On.
No, you'll be fine.
All right, it's Tech Tuesday. Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor and the host of the CNET Update. We will talk to her next. 312-981-7200. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's 720 WGN.
I did Cartwheel the Drive a couple years ago. That was fun.
You made it the whole route?
Yeah. Yeah.
You should be in the circus.
It took a long time, but it was fun.
Now that the elephants are out, they could use you.
Right, they could.
It is a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us right now, CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. It's 3 minutes or less of video excitement that tells you all about tech stuff. And let's put technology off to the side for a minute. You have a big announcement, don't you, Bridget?
Oh, yeah. Well, in about a month, I'll be a gadgety mom because I'm pregnant and I'm about to give birth soon. So I'll be taking a little break from going on the show whenever that happens. But in the meantime, I'm still here.
Bridget, that's fantastic. Congratulations. We're so happy for you.
Thank you.
Obviously, this is your first child because you're very young.
Yes, this is my first time in this whole new world. So.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, the first one. I mean this sincerely. The first time you're pregnant, everything's new, and
right.
It's just, you know, you're reading what to expect when you're expecting. You've kept up with that, I hope.
Oh, yeah, a real page turner.
Yeah, exciting.
But you need to know how your body's changing, and everything is really exciting for the first time. It's really cool, and even when you hear this, it's really exciting for the very first time. Are you ready for that?
Thank you for that, yeah.
Well, since you're going to be a mother and we're very proud and happy for you, Mother's Day is this Sunday. You're going to be a little late. So next year you can, you're still kind of a mother-to-be. Is there a mother-to-be
day? Yeah,
exactly.
It still counts. Yeah.
Hey, Hallmark sells cards for that too, right?
Oh, yeah, you're
well,
covered.
Then it is a thing.
It's a definite thing. Yeah, you're fine.
But what about tech gifts for moms? Because I am kind of a gadget bitch, and I would love to get some technology for Mother's Day. Any ideas for the mom crowd out there?
Yeah, if anyone's on the hunt for gifts, Sina does have a big list. But a few of my favorite highlights, I would say, for the mom that likes to scrapbook or just doesn't have time to go down to the pharmacy and print out photos that we all take so much on our cell phones, Polaroid has a pocket-sized digital camera that saves it all digitally, so you still get a digital copy of every photo you take, but it has a tiny printer inside. And this isn't the old Polaroid where you have to shake it to watch it develop. It's actually just a regular ink and paper that just pops out on the side and has, like, you know, and you could just stick it anywhere or fun at a party and just, you know, as you go, hand them out. So it's about $100. You can find it online, and they're like 2x3-inch prints.
Well, that's not bad at all.
I want that. Instead of putting Post-it notes when you're at a party, you can print up little pictures. And
yeah.
How cute is that for $100?
Yeah, it's really like one of those fun little talking things in a party. And then if you have a mother who hasn't gotten to the streaming world yet, maybe they have Netflix but they want a little more, there are so many options out there. We always talk about them on the show, but you know, Google's Chromecast starts at $35, and I personally like the Roku streaming stick. This is brand new. It's a little more. It's $50, but it's not just things like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, but also a lot of free options too for watching things. You know, now CBS and some other apps, you know, they'll just put things on there that you can watch without having to pay a subscription for. So there's a lot of fun entertainment options there. And all you do is just stick it in the back of the TV.
That was my question. Into like an HDMI port, is that where you stick it, or a USB port?
Exactly. It's an HDMI port in the back, and it just hangs out back there, and you also have to plug it into power. So you'll need to have an outlet. But other than that, it's out of sight, and it just works.
And this is for people who don't have smart TVs, correct?
Right. A lot of smart TVs already have ways for you to get Netflix on there. But still, even smart TVs don't have as many channel options as these things like the Roku or, you know, the Amazon Stick. That's about $40. That even has games on it. So mom can get some use out of it, and the kids can play some Android games on it.
And there's no monthly charge for that, right, Bridget? That's a one-time fee on those?
Right. What you'll be paying monthly for is a subscription to a Netflix or a subscription to Amazon's video service. But it itself is no fee.
But, like, for instance, my cousin and my sister, my cousin's my godmother, they don't have smart TVs. When they bought TVs, there weren't a lot of choices for smart TVs, and they were wondering how they could stream things. And this is exactly what they need then, right?
Oh, yeah. And I use it also for secondary bedroom TVs when, you know, you don't want to have a whole big mess of maybe a cable box, but sometimes some cable providers put apps on these things, so you don't have to have a separate, depending on, you know, what you guys have down there, Comcast, Time Warner, you don't have to have a separate box. You can just use the little stick and access it that way. through the app of your cable provider sometimes.
Oh, my God, that would be great because we have four TVs, so we're paying for four boxes. Mm-hmm. This would be cheaper just to get the $50 Roku thing.
Yeah, do your research. The apps might not have everything that your box has, but it certainly is great if you don't watch a lot of TV in the other bedrooms. You just want something to access on.
Not bad. Bridget, do you have time for one more quick one, another gift, a high-tech gift for Mother's Day?
Yes, I would say the other big category is that moms don't always have time to have all of these iTunes playlists all beautiful. I know I don't, and get a Bluetooth speaker, so whatever is on her phone, whatever she likes to play already, just have a speaker that's portable. There's some that are really cheap. Logitech has one called Logitech X100, $25. It's about a donut shape. It's colorful. You can go up in price and get something that's waterproof, so when they want to go out to the beach, you don't have to worry about it getting splashed on, something for like $70 or $50 too. So there's a lot of options there, but we have a whole list at CNET with the different brands we like.
CNET.com, that's where you go, and make sure you watch the CNET update with your lovely hostess, Bridget Carey, soon to be a mom. Really, congratulations. It's so very exciting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bridget. Good luck with everything.
Do you know what you're having?
A baby.
No, I know. Have you determined the sex?
Yes, it's going to be a girl.
Oh.
Perfect.
That's so cute.
That's the best you can do. You can't do better than that.
Unless you have a son.
Well, then there's that, yeah.
Well, congratulations. Happy Mothers-to-Be Day.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Bridget.
Oh, that is so exciting.
Yeah. Like I said, the first one's great.
Because you're experiencing everything for the first time. The second one was not bad. I just couldn't. I knew what was going to happen to my body. Now I just wanted to meet the second kid.
Sure.
And,
I get it.
You know, I'm sorry. I would like to apologize to all the breastfeeding moms out there because the cry of that baby that we played probably made you leak through your shirt.
Oh, come
and
on.
I apologize for that.
All right. News is next. Steve has that and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, every first Tuesday of the month, we bring in our friend Mike McNamara.
He's our monthly friend.
He is, he's with the Midwest Independent Film Festival, which is such a great thing.
You love when I say that, don't you?
Just makes my morning.
Mike, thank you for being here.
Sure.
And you have brought a young filmmaker, and when I say a young filmmaker...
Are you 12?
You are the youngest filmmaker we've ever met, Robert.
You look 16. Ever. I'm not even kidding. Maybe 18.
I get that a lot. And I'm okay with that because
You're actually 12. He is 12 years old.
My girlfriend's a very lucky woman. Let's say that. Because when she marries me and I'm 45, you know, everyone's going to be trying to scoop me up.
Right. She'll be fine.
And it's Robert Putka?
Putka, yes. Let's go with Putka with two O's instead. But don't Google search that.
Wait, so how do you say it?
It's Putka.
Okay, Putka.
It's Hungarian, is it not?
It is, and don't look that up on.
Why? What will we find? Can you give us a hint at what we'll find?
I can give you a hint, but it's going to stink.
Oh, all right. That's fair. All right.
You are young. I'll just tell you that. I will just tell you that. The Midwest Independent Film Festival, as Bill mentioned, Mike McNamara is the director of MAD.
Mad is the name of the film.
I'm sorry,
the director
of
Mad.
I know it is kind of crazy because I sent you guys stuff and said, then we have this Mad director, Robert Putka.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, he's a little crazy, but what is the film he's directing?
Mm-hmm. We saw the trailer. It looks really intriguing, and it has really piqued my curiosity. Why don't you tell the listeners a little about it? Because I'm very bad at giving stories and background things.
Well, it's funny when people say things like intriguing because that just means like it doesn't look good, but it looks all right. Like, I'm curious to see how bad or how good this may or may not be. It's actually about a mother and her two daughters, and the mother is kind of railroaded into a psych ward because she has a nervous breakdown. And it's a comedy. So this is the movie for anyone who ever thinks that mental illness can ever be construed as funny. But we do handle it. We do handle it in a delicate way. It's based, unfortunately, on a personal story, but not too unfortunate to the point where I don't feel comfortable exploiting it for everyone.
Oh,
to see.
Good for you, Robert. That's very smart. Are you one of the writers as well, or just the director?
Yeah,
you are.
I wrote it. Like I said, it's based on a personal story of my own, where a family member of mine suffers from bipolar disorder, and
we have that in our family too.
It runs in a lot of families.
I think it's pretty much at some point you have a relative in your. Well, I don't want to diminish the actual, but yeah,
but most
so,
people
at some
have
point,
and
it's someone
says,
you know, you might
hereditary links to it too, sure. And this is Mental Health Awareness Month of May and Mother's Day, so this is like a perfect showing.
This is like a perfect triangle. Like it's a perfect storm for this film, I guess. So if you want to celebrate Mother's Day, come and see the film tonight. but don't bring your mother, oddly enough. Leave her at home.
That's fair.
Or if you're a mother, don't bring your daughters. Bring your husband who can
it would be uncomfortable.
Commiserate with you about
that
how awful
sense.
Your children are.
I do want to stress... This movie is hysterical.
Yeah.
This is a razor sharp, really dark comedy that's really funny. I think Robert's just having a little.
Yeah.
Well, these Cleveland guys.
What I can say though, to kind of get back a little bit to the initial question about like the how personal it was to me, it's something that I never had seen a film like this where. You see the collateral damage of mental illness because I am personally the collateral damage of mental illness. And you always see how it affects one person, but you never see how it affects the family. And I think that's something important that I thought that I could bring to the table as far as mental illness films, just seeing how it affects and what kind of person it turns the people around the person with mental illness into.
That
and it's not always
me.
A good person.
That now I really have to sign up for more family therapy sessions because really it does affect the whole family.
I thought that's what this radio show was.
Yes.
Well, this is my therapy.
It?
I
it
usually
is.
Lay on a couch.
Robert, what was your family's reaction to you? You said you were kidding. You said I've exploited this, but to some extent, there's some reality to that. How do they feel about you turning this into a film?
Well, with the family member, the parent who it's kind of about, I sat down and I watched it with them and. There's a lot of conflicted feelings and emotions on it, but at the same time, if I don't have the right to telling my own story and my own version of my own story, then what story do I have the
right
to tell?
True.
I was never allowed to go to therapy as a kid, and I probably should have.
Wait, why do you mean you weren't allowed? Who wouldn't allow you? Your
parents? Because bipolar disorder, it makes the person paranoid to a degree, and they thought
embarrassed.
Yeah, and well, they thought they would lose custody of me. So I was never allowed to go to therapy, and that's painting this person in a really awful light. But it's understandable. This is not a person who is able to control that illness. So this film, in a way, is that therapy that I never got as a child growing up.
Would it be fair to say that as you're thinking up the story in your head, you're thinking I could make this a comedy, or I could make this a very serious drama? It could work on either level or some combination of the two. So how did you decide that comedy was the route?
Well, I don't think it could ever work as a straightforward over the top comedy because then you're
really exploiting.
You're really
an illness.
Exploiting. Well, yeah, and you're neglecting the I guess the more serious elements
Of
it, you know, because with comedy you have to kind of throw all of those elements under the rug in order to get a laugh. Or not under the rug. You sweep them under the rug or you throw them off to the side. But for me, I kind of had to confront my varied feelings on the relationship, and a lot of that covers the space from brutal to bizarre and back. You know, I was some things that I say to this relative and they say back to me are completely ridiculous. And I think that's kind of it's very emotional in the moment, and it's very serious, like when it's happening, when these arguments are taking place. But when with distance, you know, removed from it a couple of days or years, you're able to look at it and say, wow, that was – I can't believe I went that far that I really recriminated that element of our relationship. And just the language that you use can sometimes be completely over the top in order to get a very serious emotional point across.
Right.
And I think that's – for me, that's where comedy lives or I guess dramedy lives. It's in that space that inhabits both comedy and drama. And I felt that was just the perfect vessel for this film.
I am we're a family of ADHDers. I have two young boys, 13 and 16, that have a lot of anxiety and depression, and schizophrenia runs in my family and bipolar. So I just am happy to know that people are talking about it openly now. It's people think it's almost trendy to have a therapist, where before I found out years later as I'm an adult that my grandmother had anxiety and depression, I'm like, how did I not know that? Because you didn't talk about it then. So there are beautiful things that come out of this, like MAD, that's happening tonight at the Midwest Independent Film Festival, because at least it starts a conversation.
Yeah, and it never was intended to do so, honestly. I'm now finding that people are talking about it in that way, and they're asking me, like, did you intend to start a conversation about it, especially about the state of psychiatric care in America, because it doesn't paint it very well. It's, you know, with my parent, they would go into a psych ward and come out, and everything would be peaches for, you know, 2 weeks, and then they would sort of relatively quickly slide right back into the way they were before. And I think there's a lot of hand-washing that goes on in with psychiatric care and treatment, where it's like, okay, well, we'll babysit them for a couple of weeks, and then they just throw them right back out into the wild, so to speak, and that's where a lot of the conflict comes into yeah. play with their family.
Because they need maintenance or rehabilitation yeah. from the treatment.
Yeah, and that's just, for whatever reason, they're not getting it. And maybe it's because there's a lack of understanding about what's really going on or how to maintain it. And for any one doctor to claim that they know what's going on, I think it's rubbish, to be completely honest.
Sure.
And I don't want to paint the psychiatric community in too harsh of a light, but my experience with it is, you know, there it's not where it needs to be to help.
That's Robert Putka, whose voice you're hearing. The Midwestern Independent Film Festival is the first Tuesday of every month. Midwestfilm.org is your best bet if you're interested in tickets. Mike McNamara also sitting in with us. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Mike McNamara is here. He is with the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Robert Putka is here.
Is he a writer?
It's Putka. We'll go with Putka,
don't
though.
Follow my lead. I screwed it up.
Is it Robert? Did I say that part? I said that part right?
Robert.
A filmmaker, writer, and a director.
Robert Putka.
Robert
Putka.
Is MAD. Mike, let's talk about this all-star panel. What's going on? These are producers. Some of TV's top producers are in a panel over there.
Yeah, so with First Tuesdays with the Midwest Independent Film Festival, we really make it a full evening. So
sure. you
doors open at 6 o'clock. We've got a pre-show reception right there in the theater on the balcony.
Yeah.
And at 6:30 in the theater, we have our producers panel. And this is where we bring together some of the top, producers, directors, writers in the independent film and TV production community mm-hmm. to get together and just kind of share war stories a little bit. Well, tonight we've got a really special treat, and this just came together yesterday. We have Joe Chappelle, who is executive producer for Chicago Fire,
yeah.
was also executive producer on The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Carla Corwin, who is supervising producer on Chicago Fire, also worked on Grey's Anatomy and Weeds. And then we also have Jim Kozira, who has a brand new series out of Chicago called The Jams, which just premiered on Netflix.
That's
so
an
we
impressive
have
bunch.
These three folks coming together, talking about getting their respective TV series off the ground. And it is just an unbelievable, all-time great panel. And then we follow that up at 7:30 with the Chicago
with
premiere of MAD. So
excellent.
It's a huge night. Tickets are only $10 and just stop by midwestfilm.org.
All right. And Robert Putka. No, it's Putka. I'll get it right. You've got me so confused.
It should be both. You know that, Robert. It should be both.
Yeah. It truly is whatever you want to say. I mean,
right.
we're happy to be on WGN. He is MAD.
I'm MAD. Well, no, because whenever people say Putka, it just reminds me of like grade school, and they used to call me Bobby Poopka. So.
Oh, that's oh, right. mean.
I mean,
yeah,
clearly
so
this
mean.
Was the, you got a bad, you got dealt a bad hand.
I got dealt, well, and if you
department.
Look up the meaning of it, a doubly hand,
oh,
a doubly bad hand.
That's not good.
To say the least.
That's not good.
But see, that helped pave for the future for where you are now. You're yeah. young.
Yes, the agonizing years of my life created.
You need conflict for a good story, Robert. You know that.
Exactly, and I'm just so glad that I got to be... come up through, you know, all the hard times and,
yep.
and the hard knocks. They
yep.
it really, what do they say about diamonds? Like, you need pressure on a lump of coal to turn it into a diamond.
That's
well,
true.
Now we're getting deep, people.
That's true.
Like
now we're
I have to
there.
Ask Mike, actually, as
oh,
well.
Okay.
Was this a pure coincidence that this is taking place on Mother's Day, like
it's,
the week of Mother's Day?
It's interesting, because I was thinking about that. It is a complete coincidence. So
glad
I wish
I brought
I could
attention
claim
to it.
That, well, you guys mentioned Mother's Day, and it just washed over me that
yeah,
I have to
timing
start thinking
be better.
About what I'm going to get from my wonderful, amazing, wonderful, wonderful mom.
Oh, you have time. You have till Sunday.
Maybe a pillow or
yeah, my
cools
pillow.
Itself.
That'll work.
All right, so you, what I'm getting at, though, Robert Putka, is this, you won an award at the Slam Dance Festival. Explain what this is.
We did not win an award. That would detract away from the people who did win awards. I wish we did. But we world premiered there, which is like a really huge honor in like the independent film world, because there's like 5,000 submissions and they only chose like 15 feature films to play, and Mad was one of them. And we've actually had a pretty good run so far playing at a bunch of film festivals, and that's kind of like the mark of quality for this film.
Sure. Yeah.
Other people like it, so you should too.
Robert, Patty Duke, the actress Patty Duke, died about a month ago, and she was one of the first celebrities to come forth and talk about her illness, that she had bipolar disorder, although Patty Duke used to say she wanted to call it bipolar disorder. She wanted to call it manic depression because that was more accurate. What are your thoughts on that?
It's weird. I'm still kind of fuzzy on the difference between the two because my parent claims to have manic depression and bipolar disorder because that's what they've been told by doctors. So is there a difference? I don't know. I don't claim to be a doctor. So if you have any insight on that, please let me know what the difference is, and then maybe I can tell their doctors, like, get your act in order, because there's a difference, or there isn't a difference between the two, or there is a difference between the two.
Well, she said that the term manic depression was more accurate, that bipolar didn't quite encapsulate how high the highs were and how low the lows were. Does that make sense?
It does make sense to me. I can say from my experience, it's actually a very deceptive disease to have, because like it's portrayed in most films like Silver Linings Playbook or any other mental illness film, and it kind of paints these people as quirky and kind of always on. Like Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook, he looks like he's on a cocaine bender nonstop, and that's not how the illness actually is if you're around a person, you know, nearly 24/7 who does have one. They're actually kind of normal, you know, for like 80% of the time, and then it's that 20% of the time where they're vacillating.
The cycling
exactly.
Is what they call it.
And that's something else that this film hopefully will add to the discussion, if you will, is that these people are basically like us, and a lot of times the illness is invisible until it's not, and then when it's not is when it's completely crushing, because it sneaks up on you, and it smacks you upside the head, and then you're wondering what just happened.
Sure.
And a common problem as well with bipolar or manic depressive, you feel better on the medication and you think, I'm feeling really good now, I don't need to take the medication. You do need to take the medication. That's when the problems happen. Therapy works as well. And I wanted to share something from a listener, 219. Thanks for having Robert on. I'm working on a book about my great aunt who was institutionalized in the 1950s. She was probably bipolar but put on the wrong medication and then diagnosed as schizophrenic. We need more of these stories out there to end the stigma.
Well, that is a very kind thing. And I'm not surprised to hear these reactions, because I've heard them over the last few months. I'm very grateful that I'm able to get this story out there. And it has some sort of resonance aside from me just getting off on being funny and entertaining people, because that was my initial intention, was just to entertain people.
Your three main characters, the mom and then, of course, the two daughters are obviously all women. Is that more challenging for you to write for characters that are female as opposed to male?
Well, I like to think women are people, too.
Yeah, they are.
So
they definitely are.
So,
hold on a minute.
In your defense, Bill's a big proponent of that, too. His wife's an actor.
I am, but if I was writing that, I might think to myself, being a guy, this will be an easy character for me to relate to as a writer if I throw at least one of the leads a guy way.
I was just pulling your chain.
No,
Bill.
I know.
I've heard that question a lot. I've heard that question an awful lot. When I sit down to write it, I put myself in the position of the women, the two daughters, and I wrote as I would talk. I think our fears and our insecurities and our anger and our emotions are universal, whether, you know, regardless of gender. I think it's okay for me just to write as myself and then use these women as the vessel to, you know, deliver the emotions and the lines. I don't find too much distinction. And I think a lot of people have been saying like these female characters are really well written. And I mean, the irony is I wrote them basically as men, as myself.
Yeah.
I think maybe I'm a very sensitive man.
It seems like it.
Let me throw out a couple of things. I know we're running out of time.
Yes.
Just because I just
Good afternoon, I'm Dolly McCarthy.
Dolly McCarthy said hello, by the way, to both of you.
Kelly, she doesn't do that that often.
A big fan.
That was
She's
pretty
a big
cool.
fan of your work.
She just was like, I have to get in here.
Yep.
You know, speaking to the screenplay, there was a review that just came out from Paste Magazine. Big critic said, its excellent screenplay is anchored by a trio of exceptionally strong performances
nice.
By these three female actors. And one of them, which a lot of people don't know, a woman named Marianne Plunkett, is a Tony Award winner.
Oh, yeah?
And she is the matriarch. And she is just... outstanding in this film. So just thought I'd throw a little bit out there.
She was on House of Cards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's another, if I can actually, I'm going to just give a public thanks to my actresses as well for being real champs about it. And I mean, a lot of the reason that it comes off as authentic is because of, you know, their ability to take my words and make them very real, put them in a very real world. So thanks, guys, if you ever listen to this. I don't know if you guys archive your radio interviews.
Yeah, you can listen to the podcast, WGNRadio.com. You are going to go places. This is just the beginning of your journey. It sounds so great. I have to see this. His name is Robert Putka, and
Beautiful.
The movie is Mad, and it's tonight at the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Give us the deets on that, and then tell us where we can see it if we can't make it tonight.
Sure. The pre-show reception starts at 6 o'clock tonight. We've got a panel at 6:30 with some of the top execs and TV, and then Robert's film Mad premieres at 7:30. If you can't make it tonight, you actually can't see it anywhere else right now, so that is why you should come out tonight.
Can I come to your house, Robert, and watch it?
If I'm not living on the street in a couple of months.
I'll take it.
I mean, I am an independent filmmaker, so that, right. that's a real possibility.
But MidwestFilm.org, buy tickets. They're as inexpensive as $10. Come out tonight. It's going to be an incredible night, and it's at Landmark Century Center Cinema, 2828 North Clark, and Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. We love you guys.
Mike, thank you. Love right back at you. Robert, nice to meet you. Good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
A quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200.
Jump in. The water's great.
Yeah, it's warm in here. You know how Steve Cochran's show has the Kid of the Week? Did you ever hear that segment, the Kid of the Week? It's all good kids. You know who's not going to be the winner on Kid of the Week? Hunter Osborne.
He's got a great name.
Boy, doesn't he have a nice name? You'd think with a name like Hunter Osborne, he'd be a fine, upstanding citizen, a pillar in his community. You'd be wrong.
What'd he do?
Hunter Osborne, as many high school kids will tell you this time of year, was thrilled to have his picture in the yearbook, his high school yearbook. But he took it a little too far. In his picture, his penis is showing.
Was it a full body shot, obviously? Usually, I was going to say there's a headshot in there somewhere. Because that's what it is in high school. In the yearbooks, it's a headshot.
Yeah. Well, not in that picture. But you know how in the rest of the yearbook, there's pictures of kids just doing things around the school?
Oh, just random.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, not his senior portrait.
No, not in the portrait. That would be a challenge.
Because I'm like,
challenge.
How did they do it?
That would be a big challenge. An Arizona student who showed his penis in his football team's photograph. He did it with the football team. Did you ever do it with the football team?
I'm not answering that.
The Arizona student. It's none of my business.
You're lucky I like you.
None of my business. Anyway, this student was arrested briefly after his high school unwittingly sent the image to hundreds of his Phoenix area classmates as part of its yearbook, officials said on Monday. A spokeswoman for the Red Mountain, and they're red because they're embarrassed, the Red Mountain High School said that the photo was printed in all of the school's yearbooks destined to go out to 3,400 students, but thus far only 250 books had been given out.
And they will be being sold on eBay right. for like $100,000.
Right. They're collector's items. Luckily, most of the yearbooks are still in their boxes, said spokeswoman Helen Hollins. The school this
is funny. He should have kept his in a box.
The school.
What was that noise?
I don't know what that was. But I think my tire's flat.
Sound like a whoopee cushion.
It was a whoopee cushion, Kevin. That's what it was. The school hopes to get all 250 yearbooks back.
Oh yeah, good
I'm
luck.
I'm sure that'll
that.
Happen.
You
I'm
might
positive.
Get one back because it'll be the
it
school
back?
Nurse.
Right. Nobody's going to give that book back. They hope to get all 250 yearbooks back. They said unrealistically, and all books in the school possession will be edited to cover the inappropriate content. So what does that mean?
A post-it note? Are you going to go through every yearbook and put a post-it note there?
Remember, I'm sure this company still exists. If you'd go to like Osco or a pharmacy or something and you went into the school supply section, there was this little, they were stickers that had different size colored dots.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you get fluorescent ones, sometimes just black or white.
We use those a lot in the radio business when cartridges, carts were used because like all the news music would be blue.
Right, right.
Those were very handy, yes.
So that the school right now is purchasing 80 packs of those dots so they can just put them all over the yearbook. The student, Hunter Osborne, told police that he was acting on a dare from another football player when court documents said he exposed his penis to the top of his waistband in his football uniform pants.
To the top of his waistband.
Yeah. That's, you know, so he just pulled the waistband down.
Oh, he came from the top.
Yeah.
Instead of like through the leg hole.
Right, 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 right.
Why do you keep saying penis?
It's because it says it in the story. What should I say?
I don't know.
His thingy. He exposed his thingy through the top of the waistband.
Continue with penis.
59 students ranging in age.
Oh, they're 10 short.
Oh, come on. Ranging in age from 15 to 19 years old, and 10 faculty members were present at the time, police said.
But you're not going to see that in a big group photo.
I don't think you would either. I don't think so.
At least he had his helmet on.
Osborne, released from custody on Sunday after being arrested. Are you proud of yourself?
Bit.
Oh, you should
a
be.
Bit.
You should be. Released from custody, much like his thingy.
You can say
also,
penis.
He was also released from his custody. Osborne released from custody on Sunday after being arrested the day earlier. faced several counts of misdemeanor indecent exposure. Look at the number there.
69 counts.
Yes.
They put that in there on purpose.
I think they're trying to be mean. They faced many counts of misdemeanor indecent exposure and one count of felony furnishing harmful items to minors, according to Mesa police.
Well, it's not harmful to everyone.
No. No.
I don't agree with the law end of this. This is a high school prank.
So don't arrest the kid. What do you do to this kid?
It's a prank. You suspend him or something. But someone in the yearbook committee let that go through.
I think so, too. I think somebody had to be in on this. Although, in a group team photo...
That's their job.
I don't want to brag. I'm going to say this, and I'm not going to brag. I was the senior editor of my 8th grade yearbook, Wendy. And I'm not saying that to brag. It's true.
And you would have missed this?
I don't think I would have seen this. I doubt, because you're working on a deadline and you want to put out the best possible yearbook you can and you're doing everything you can to get everything to the printer in time. I think somebody just overlooked this. No offense to you.
Deadline or headline?
Headline. No offense to you, Hunter Osborne, but I think somebody just didn't see it.
Oh, that hurts.
I don't mean to be cruel. You know, but I'm just saying you're in such a hurry to make sure all the pictures are straight and all the names match up.
And I guess they didn't take a bunch of different shots.
Right.
So, because I'm thinking I hate in a yearbook picture when there's some dude or girl with their eyes closed.
Right.
It's like, oh, my God, they're taking the picture. You can't keep your eyes open for a second.
Right.
But we've all been in that position, and I don't think there's a ton to choose from.
Exactly.
It's like just get a big group of people together and...
Pick the picture where the most people look decent. Not counting you, Hunter Osborne, but most of the people in the picture kept their pants on. So they look at that.
Really? This is illegal? I mean, it's...
Well, it's illegal.
It's illegal to go to a park and expose yourself. It's,
right.
I mean, I guess it's... I don't know.
So where does the legality stop? Do you blame the yearbook themselves for not policing it better? The people who were in charge, the publishers of the yearbook... Do you blame the school? Do you blame society? When
well,
do you blame society?
You blame him, but it's like a school prank. I guess there's
right.
School pranks can be illegal as well. I've just talked myself into it now.
But now this kid is—he's famous there in Arizona, in his town at Red Mountain High School forever. He'll always be the kid who did this, no matter what this kid ever does in his life. He's the kid who pulled his pants down for the yearbook picture. He's cemented forever.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I hope it's a bad thing. I'd like to think that at some point he rebounds and does something better with his life. But at every reunion, they'll go, oh, I wonder if Hunter Osborne's going to be there. We're going to take a group picture, Hunter. Try to keep your pants on.
He can't now.
Right.
People
won't recognize him. They'll see him at reunions. They'll go, I don't know who you are. Oh, Hunter Osborne. How are you? I didn't recognize you.
You are going to remember this kid forever. In my older son Michael's preschool class, there was this little kid, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he got up there. It was some little pageant, and they were supposed to get up and introduce themselves. And everybody was, except when this kid got up there. He got up there. He stood on the little stand and looked at everybody and paused, and then he just went, underpants, and then got off the stage, and everybody laughed.
Sure.
Because it's a funny word, but every time I see this kid, I want to go, hey, underpants.
The underpants kid. When we put our yearbook together in eighth grade, here's what you get. When you got it, when you're on the yearbook committee, you get this kit, and it has all kinds of things. Like, it has pictures of, like, you know, balloons and kings and king's crowns and stuff like that. Just little things to help you make the yearbook more interesting, you know?
Oh, like little characters.
It's a cartoon of a football player
graphics.
With his hand out. Yeah, it's graphics. So then what you do is you cut them out and you put them on these sheets. They're like grids. Like, first you lay down the picture, then you put everybody's name in.
Like,
and then
scrapbooking.
It's like scrapbooking. You've got all this empty space, so you put down a picture of a football player or a picture of a cheerleader or pom-poms or whatever. All right, so more than one, like three or four of the pages are just titles of groups. Like, it could be the Mathletes or the Science Club or whatever. And then you have that in script, and you can put that over their picture. Well, one of the ones that was in the kit was Future Farmers of America. And this was Oak Forest, and we all thought that that was a joke. We didn't think that grade school kids, could potentially be planning to be farmers when they were in grade. We had no idea that was real. So that was one of the pages. We found a bunch of kids, and we put the banner Future Farmers of America. We thought that was hysterical.
And you just picked random kids?
Yeah. We had no idea that was a real thing. And then years later, I'm looking through my wife's yearbook, and she's got it. And I go, you guys did the same joke we did. And she goes, well, I don't understand the joke. And I go, you just picked kids and you said they'll be farmers someday. And she goes, no, those kids, they're all from farm families, and their plan was to be farmers. We had no idea that was a real thing. I had
no
idea.
You need to consult with me, young man.
I didn't know you at the time. I didn't know you, Ori. I would have called you. I didn't
know
that. Future
farmers in our yearbook.
Well, I knew you, for heaven's sakes. I've known you all your life.
That's true. That's true. And now I think a couple of those kids may be farmers, so the joke's on me. I had no idea.
Well, thank you, O.
Thanks,
Orion. We have to
take
a break, and then some people want to chime in on this.
All right. It's Phil and Wendy, WGN.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang.
Correct. I've never worked on a chain gang, so I'm just taking their word for it that this is what it sounds like.
What do they do?
They do, you know, the stuff.
You don't know either.
They clean the stuff up and they get rid of the stuff and, you know.
They build chains, don't they? You heard the sound.
I don't think so. I think the chain refers to the fact that they are chained together.
Like prisoners?
Yes.
Why am I
not like prisoners?
So naive.
Prisoners.
Seriously?
Not even a little bit like prisoners. Actual prisoners. Yeah, that's what your chain gang is. These are men that are chained together. They've done wrong things, so.
Yeah.
The jail decided, let's join them all together.
That's what I thought, but then I thought I'd be politically correct if I just assumed people who worked on chains were in a prison gang.
No. Your traditional chain gang has a group of men, sometimes six. Could be as many as eight, I believe, chained together.
What, did you do a book report on the chain gang?
No.
Prisoners?
I keep my eyes open for things chain gang related.
Do they do chain gangs anymore?
Yeah, I think they still have chain. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're chained together to perform menial or physically challenging work as a form of punishment.
Right. It's always menial tasks. You wouldn't have like a chain gang do surgeries or something like that, because that'd be extremely dangerous. But, you know, some menial
repairing
tasks,
buildings,
that sort of thing.
Building
is fine.
Roads,
yeah.
Or clearing land.
That's right. That's what your chain gangs do.
How do you work together being chained together like that?
Well, you got to hope everyone gets along, because think about it. If you're chained to a guy and you don't like him at all, that's going to make for a long afternoon. This is one of the many reasons why you shouldn't commit felonies. Remember, you always said to me, give me a handful of reasons why I shouldn't commit a felony. This would be way up at the top of the list. You end up on a chain gang with people you don't get along with.
And you have to work in sync.
You have to.
Because otherwise you'd be like a push me, pull you.
Right. And you tend need to go to the bathroom a lot. Which
I don't
would be,
go a lot, okay?
You don't think so?
I go once, maybe twice in the whole time I'm here. You go never.
Correct.
You're a droid.
I'd be an ideal chain gang member for that reason alone.
No, because you would get so irritated when somebody goes, hey, I got to use the facilities. Right. Oh, my God, again?
Right.
Put a catheter in this guy.
How much lemonade did you drink, Robert? We were just in the bathroom. Now you got to go back? Seriously.
You're just trying to get out of work, aren't you, Robert?
Yes. But I'd be the chain gang member of the year because I would put my time in. I wouldn't be wasting time. Got to go to the bathroom. Got to just walk around. I'd be on the job 24/7. Whatever it took, I'd be there.
May I just ask you what chain gang member of the year would receive in accolades? Would it be a trophy? Would it be a bonus? Early out?
I think you'd get a small trophy, I think. Just a small, nothing elaborate because you're, you know, at that point you're in prison. So, you know. You don't want to be singled out. Oh, look at Bill's cell filled with trophies. How nice that must be. I wouldn't be showy about it, but I wouldn't mind having a couple of small plaques or so, you know, just something to say this guy was good at what he did.
You know, there's America's only female chain gang who are...
There's only one female chain gang?
Yeah, this is in the Daily Mail, but it was dated 2012, so there may be more.
Now there's probably
a lot. But this was the
more.
First one then.
Yeah.
The women who pull weeds and bury unclaimed bodies in Arizona desert, they do that to avoid 23 hours of lockdown in country's toughest jail. So if they do this...
You could volunteer for it.
Yeah, but it looks like Halloween costumes. It's a bunch of, you know, white and black striped women all chained together.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be alarming to see that by the side of the road
if
you were driving down some rural highway and you just looked over and you saw six guys chained together doing something. I'd be nervous.
I'm nervous when I'm on the Stevenson or the Eisenhower and you drive next to the sheriff's bus where it says, you know, prisoners.
Right.
I really get nervous.
I've seen enough Nicolas Cage movies to know at some point that bus is going to swerve.
Accident. Then they all break loose.
Do you remember... By Joliet Prison. Now, that prison's totally gone, right? I don't think they serve as a prison at all anymore in Joliet, I don't think. But for years...
Dwight's out of business, I know that.
Is Dwight out of business?
The women's penitentiary, but...
There were signs near Joliet State Prison that said, do not pick up hitchhikers.
And that doesn't alarm you?
Yeah, that's every time I saw that, it would make me nervous.
Here's the thing. You don't have to tell me not to pick them up.
Right. I've never picked one up at any point, but being in the shadow of a prison wouldn't lend itself to, I'd go, well, this would be the one time maybe I would pick one up.
A hitchhiker?
Right. Right. Now, I used to work with a guy who made it a regular practice. I worked with this guy named Dennis, and he said that over the years he picked up dozens of hitchhikers, always without any kind of event, that it would just be a thing. He'd see a guy hitchhiking. And I don't remember the last time I saw somebody in a road with their thumb up. It's been that long since I saw somebody physically hitchhiking. But Dennis said for years and years and years, he'd see somebody and he'd go, well, that's not fair that I have a car and that guy doesn't. So he'd give people rides all over the town.
And he never got killed.
No, never once got killed. Nope.
You don't see anybody with their thumb sticking out anymore because there's an app for that. You just hold your phone and it's the,
oh,
you know, the thumb.
So.
Because, you know, when you'd go to concerts, I'm sure, I'll bet you $10, how about $5?
What?
That you never held a lighter up to get an encore.
I never did that.
All right.
Because I knew it. I was savvy enough to know that they were going to do an encore. Even if we yelled, please no encore, they would still, it's part of the show. They go off, they pretend they're done. And they come back for an encore.
I know you didn't smoke anything, cigarettes or pot, but I'm sure you had friends that had lighters, and usually someone who smokes has a couple lighters.
True.
You never borrowed one? You never did it?
No, because I knew it. Like, there's no band in the world that would base their decision on whether to come back or not based on me wanting them to come back. Like,
who'd
be backstage peeking behind the curtain, Billy Joel just looking behind the curtain going... Does Bill want me to come back? He does? All right, I'll come back. I'll do another
song. Imagine looking out from behind the curtain and seeing the whole place lit up with lighters, though. But there's an app that has a lighter.
Oh, they do?
Seriously, which is really stupid.
Life has gotten too easy.
I know. And really, encores, I don't get that anyway. Because you know they're coming out. There are bands that don't do encores. And then you don't know when to leave.
Right. I know. You just stand there.
I know they're coming back.
They must
out.
Be coming back. I've been to 100 shows. They always come back. These guys aren't coming back.
And with Deadpool, there's a little bonus at the end. Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't remember what happens, but I know that there's a little a scene at the end of the credits.
It's pretty funny, but I would have left. There's a lot of movies now that do it,
right?
And I think that's really smart because you should look at the credits. You should give those people accolades that put so much hard work.
Sure.
And those are the people that I think worked harder than the big names at the beginning.
Without a doubt.
So I think, you know, do you see people in a movie theater holding their lighters out? Is there a bonus laugh?
Start doing that in theaters. More! We want more movie!
All right, we're talking chain gangs and people want to jump in, and hitchhikers too. They kind of combine with each other. 312-981-7200. Quick break. We're back. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN. Pick us up. I could have just read it now.
No, do it. People want to hear about it, and they're probably gathering relatives and friends together, and they'll hear it together later.
I just didn't look at the time.
That's
sorry.
That's fine.
All right, we were talking about chain gangs, and I didn't know that they still exist.
Oh,
someone
yeah.
texted in and said that there's a chain gang that picks up litter along the highways in Indiana. I don't know if that's true, but that's what someone texted us.
I can imagine that's probably true.
Famous chain gangs for $20, Steve?
I'm a fugitive from a chain gang starring Paul Muni.
Oh, yeah, that's a great movie.
Movies.
Great movie.
Okay. Now, I'm glad that you remember it, Bill, because obviously Wendy doesn't know anything about Paul Newman.
Yes, I do.
Know.
I know
Paul
a movie.
Muni.
What was it, Wendy, for $30?
Well, it's on the screen, but I know it's Cool Hand Luke because my high school boyfriend named his dog Luke after.
That's with George
Cool
Kennedy
Hand Luke.
And Strother Martin. And, of course,
Paul Newman
playing the title role.
Yes.
Great movie.
And obviously, we do have a failure to communicate with Wendy from time to time.
You.
Yes, ma'am.
What we have here is a
failure
to
communicate.
That's it.
You are underestimating me, Steve.
Well, Wendy, I called Kevin a number of times during playoff season wondering.
What playoffs?
About you.
The Blackhawks?
How quickly you forget.
Yes. Yes, how quickly we forget. Relative to your lingerie, you know, the Lord Stanley Cups. And I'm surprised that no one ever petitioned you for a puck in the pants. Could you imagine the luck we would have had in Game 7?
Would have been a different story.
Cochran only uses celebrities.
Oh, by the way, when your guest shows up, okay, I live in Carroll Stream, and we have a street here named after his sister.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you talking John Schmale?
Thank you. Now I know how to pronounce the street.
No, I didn't know.
No. Is that really?
Is that street really named after his sister? I don't know if that's true or not. Is it?
Well, I live in Carroll Stream. Of course it's true.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
All right.
I didn't know that.
And Carroll Stream is a real woman living in Vegas.
No,
that
I
was
knew
your
that.
Cousin.
I do know that. I do know that.
All right. Well, we will ask him about that, but I call it Schmale Road.
I know. A lot of people do.
And Schmale is correct.
If that's the way he pronounces his family name, we've got to let all the people know that.
Everyone's been saying it wrong. Well, Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
You're right about the films. Absolutely right.
You should get your own radio show here. You have a lot of knowledge.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there was a producer there. His first name was Rick.
I'm not listening. I don't know if he was going to slam somebody.
He wasn't going to say anything.
Are you going to slam somebody, Steve?
No, I'm not going to slam anybody except Kozlowski because he was bad-mouthing.
Oh, your phone broke up, and it really did. It did. Did you not hear it? Thanks, Steve. We had a failure to communicate right there.
It was his own self-fulfilling prophecy.
Look what happens. Hi, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Good. It was just quite entertaining, to be honest with you.
Thank you.
Very good. When I was a kid, you know, early teens, whatever it is, I used to ditch school all the time, you know. And we were down in Arkansas, piled the whole family into the damn car, you know, sitting there like, what am I doing here? What's going on? So the old man wanted to go to this historical site, which we never found. And we were on some side road, and there was a chain gang there. And he stopped, and he goes, look at that. And so I said, yeah, what about it? He goes, if you ditch school again, that's where you're going to wind up.
Oh, nice.
Did it work? Did it put the fear of chain gang in you?
No, not really, but so things didn't change much at school. But at any rate, I'll never forget that. But there was an actual chain gang out there. And then the next thing I saw about the chain gangs was when Paul Newman played in Cool Hand Luke.
Sure.
But it was identical to that. They were chained together. They were working on the side of the road, you know, hacking down weeds and everything else. And there were two guys with rifles at either end.
Yeah. Although they're chained together, where are they going to go? I guess if they all went in unison, they could try and run away.
It'd be so hard to escape having six guys. It'd be impossible.
Unless Paul Newman used the, he had to use the facilities. So, you know, shaking the bush over here, boss, you know.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat.
I'm glad it worked on you, Pat.
Take care.
All right. You
it
too.
It didn't work, he said.
No, he's not. He seems to be living a good lifestyle. He's not on a chain gang. He's all right.
Judy, you have some startling news for all of us.
I do. Hello. I love your show.
Thank you.
Jude.
And I often listen to it when I am driving back and forth to Joliet, where I am from. I grew up there. And my mother is still there, and so I go visit her. And yesterday, I am not kidding you, yesterday, the middle of the day, bright daylight, I saw a hitchhiker not half a mile away from Stateville Prison.
Their chance of getting picked up that close to a prison is like a million to one shot. You wouldn't pick up a hitchhiker near there.
No, I mean, I wouldn't pick up a hitchhiker anyway, but I just thought, if you're going to do that, it seems like you maybe walk a half mile away and then give it a shot, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That makes sense.
But I was really surprised. I was startled that it, that I too felt like Wendy, you said, do people still do that? I couldn't believe that I was seeing that yesterday.
Are there still signs, Judy, at the side of the road saying do not pick up hitchhikers?
You know what? I think so. I have to say I've driven that way so many times that some of it, I don't even register anymore.
It blends in.
I assume that those signs are still there. I think that they are, and I know what signs you're talking about. Yeah.
I think that's standard at any prison, not just the one in Joliet, but I think if you've got a prison, part of the kit you get when you're building your prison are the signs to put on the road saying, don't pick up hitchhikers.
Right. And Stateville is still functioning. I think
it's
the Joliet Correctional Center.
Someone texted us.
That's right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Drive safely and keep your doors locked.
Okay. Thank you.
When they made the show Prison Break on Fox, they filmed it over there at Joliet because it was empty at the time. And I'm trying to remember what the movie was. With Sean Penn, is it Bad Boys or something, maybe?
Oh, I totally remember that movie.
S.A. Morales.
Yes,
and
that
Sean
was
Penn.
Bad Boys.
Yeah.
And there's also, I guess, doesn't Rob Zombie do the
Haunted House?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that at Stateville?
A couple months. Yeah, I think so. For a month or two, right before Halloween every year. Obviously.
Should I be offended that there's a Do Not Pick Up Hitchhiker sign in front of our house?
No, I wouldn't let that get to me at all.
All right,
you're fine.
And you don't need to hitchhike now? Can't you just set up a ride on Craigslist
somewhere? Yeah, it's easier.
We're going to kill you anyway.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I found something online. It was all over Facebook. Chicago Tribune did a great article on this. And I want to start at the beginning, so we'll introduce our guests and let them explain the story. On the line with us is Dr. John Schmale and Tammy Suchoff. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Good. Hello.
Reading this Chicago Tribune article, and I'll start it off, and then I'd like you to take it after this, John. Your basement flooded, and you went down to investigate the damage, and lo and behold, you found something that was pretty important to you. Why don't you take it from there?
Well, I'll back up a little bit. We had been working with Rose and Chris from Chicago Tribune trying to put together a story about the student nurses. And we really didn't have any pictures of the student nurses. We had kind of individual pictures of the girls growing up. But
and the nurses you referred to, July 14th, they were all killed in a Chicago townhouse, 1966.
Correct. And so I happened to go down there and found this kind of soggy box and brought it out when it dried up. There were four carousels. If you're from the old days, you remember Kodak had carousels, and each carousel held 80 slides. And when you open up one of the carousel boxes, there was a pink note in there in my mom's handwriting, and it said Nina's nurses' slides. and I had no idea that we'd had them. And I have to admit that over all the years, I had not ever really looked at Nina's pictures or things. They were kind of out of sight, out of mind. But then when we started to look at these slides, we could not believe it, because here was pictures of Nina and all of the student nurses doing just fun, great things that young girls do. So it suddenly, for me anyway, reopened what these girls were all about, and they were real people, and they were fun, and they were cute, and they were giggly, and they did dumb things.
When something happens like this, it's all about the person who killed them, you know, Richard Speck. But this is something we need to do to celebrate the lives of the victims. We want to know more, and it looks like you found out more about your sister. She was your little sister? Or, excuse me, your older sister?
No, my sister was 4 years younger.
Oh, okay. And did you, she went to nursing school. You probably didn't know much about what she did in that townhouse.
Well, you know, at the time that she was in nursing school, I was in medical school, and then I was an intern, and then a resident. So I was actually in Chicago in what was then the U of I Medical Center, and she was down at South Chicago Community Hospital School of Nursing. So, yeah, we kind of saw each other in passing, but we were both kind of busy with what we were doing.
John, in a strange way, do you look at finding these pictures as something of a blessing? And I hope you'll understand this. You thought maybe you had seen or knew of almost everything there could have been to have known about your sister, but all of a sudden you get all these pictures which tell stories that you really didn't know about. So in a way, do you feel like this was a lucky thing that you didn't see them until now?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that it completely changed my psychic. I mean, I as other family members, really struggled for 50 years. You know, I never told my kids about really Nina or any details about her death. And we had a box of her stuff that I wouldn't look at. And my wife was finally the one that opened the box and began looking at that. Then when I found the pictures, my wife and I, Joyce, had a little difficulty identifying everybody, but then everything really opened up when we were able to share the pictures with Tammy Suchoff, because she and my sister were very close friends, and when we brought the pictures to show her, she was able not only to identify the nurses in the picture, but she had stories behind all the pictures. You know, the one picture in the newspaper that I really like is the one of Tammy and my sister in their cat's outfits. And when we first saw it, we thought it was some kind of a Halloween party or something. And then she came up with, oh, no, there's a story behind that. And she was able to tell us the story. And so it really opened up who these girls were and what really neat people they were.
John Schmale on the line with us, the older brother of Nina, Joe Schmale, one of the eight nurses killed July 14th, 1966. And Tammy Suchoff is also on the line. Now, as we learned, you were friends with Nina, you and the girls that lived in that townhouse. You were a nursing student, and in the story I read that you needed to borrow something and rang the doorbell. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Well, I worked the 3 to 11 shift, and I got back to the dorms around 11:30 or so, and I was hungry. I hadn't eaten anything, and we were out of stock. Usually the hospital provided us with bread and eggs and milk, and we didn't have anything in the fridge. So my boyfriend was on the phone at the time, and I asked him to hold on so I could run next door and borrow some bread. And I went to the first townhouse where Speck had already gotten into. And I rang the doorbell. I waited a few minutes, and no one responded. So I just ran to the other townhouse, because there were 3 townhomes. And I went to the other townhouse, and again, nobody had anything. So I just ran back to my dorm and, got on the phone and talked to my boyfriend. And after that, we studied till about 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
And then when did you find the news, just as everyone did?
Yeah, well, after we finished studying, it was quite late, and around 6 or 6:30 in the morning, somebody came to my bed and started shaking me and telling me, Tammy, hurry up, get up. Something awful has happened. And I jumped up and I saw all the commotion.
All right, so Nina Jo Schmale, one of the nurses, we have her brother John Schmale on the line with us. Can you run through the names of the other nurses who were killed? And we're going to take a break and come back and find out a little bit more about some of these women as we celebrate their lives and not their deaths. There's
Nina Jo Schmale, Suzanne Ferris, Marianne Jordan, Gloria Davis. Gloria Davy. Pam Wilkening? I'm trying to think. There were
Merlita Gargolo.
Well, yeah, the Filipino nurse. We're talking about...
Valentina...
Pasion.
They were only with us for 2 months when that happened.
And Patricia Ann Matusek, did we mention her?
Yeah, Matusek. No, I didn't mention her. Matusek was the sixth one.
Before we go to the commercial break, can you tell us about that cat costume that you and Nina were wearing and this, a brief story behind that?
Well, that was during initiation. We were on probation the first 6 months, and we also had to go through some initiation, and all of us had to do something. We had to perform. We had to entertain the upperclassmen. And Nina and I didn't have any talents of any sort. We couldn't sing. We couldn't, play any instruments, so we were just trying to figure out what we could do. And in 1963, actually the song came out in 62, I believe, Alley Cat was very popular on the radio. And so we thought about just doing a little skit to Alley Cat. It had a cute little tune. It had a nice little tempo. And so we decided to make some black, costumes and dance to the music.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing
that's beautiful.
Wrong with that.
No, that's great.
but unless you know Tammy, we never would have known that story.
Right.
That's what made having Tammy look at the slide so helpful.
Well, both of us were very shy. Nina was very reserved. She was, a little bit on the quiet side.
Yeah.
Had a very dry sense of humor, though. I mean, she was really funny. And I'm really very reserved myself, so we were quite embarrassed. We couldn't figure out what we could possibly do in front of such a large crowd. So we put on the music, and Alley Cat is a really cute song. It's an instrumental.
Here we go. We all know this song.
You know it, yeah. So we danced to it.
See, everybody knows this song.
Sure, of course.
So, John, it's like Tammy filled in the blanks from all these pictures that you found, and we're going to talk more about that when we come back. Also want to find out how you guys hooked up after this terrible tragedy in 1966. We're on the line with John Schmale, older brother of Nina Jo Schmale, one of the eight nurses killed in a Chicago townhouse July 14th, 1966, and another nursing student from that time, Tammy Suchoff. We'll be back. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill, it's Wendy, it's 720 WGN, and on the line with us, we are talking to John Schmale. His sister, Nina Jo Schmale, was one of eight young nurses killed on July 14th, 1966. Tammy Suchoff was also one of the nursing students at South Chicago Community Hospital. They're both on the line with us, and if we could, we'd like to share a text that someone sent in while we were on the air with you. It says, thanks, Dr. Schmale. I was a Loyola student in 66 and continue to be haunted by the murders. A post of the Trib story on Facebook drew responses from Nina's generation as well as many younger women who saw pictures of aunts they never met. So thank you.
Well, that's nice to hear.
It is nice to hear. And these stories need to be told. Tell us a little something about your sister that you learned after finding these slides and talking to Tammy.
Oh, that's, you're catching me on that one. Well, I guess one of the things I saw that I'd forgotten about over the years was what a fun person she really was. And kind of when I saw the slides, I kind of was reintroduced to my sister all over again. In order to really cope with things over the 50 years, it was almost like I had to put her away in a box and not remember. But then when I saw the slides and I was able to talk to Tammy about her, because Tammy was her best friend, you know, it kind of like I got reintroduced to her all over again, and I remember what a neat person and a cute girl she was. And
she liked Elvis, didn't she?
She loved Elvis, and she loved pink. And her room at home, her bedroom was painted pink, solid. So yeah. Tammy really helped me remember a lot about Nina.
Had the two of you kept in fairly close contact over the past 50 years?
Yeah, well, Tammy and I did not.
No?
So yeah. Actually, none of the families had kept in contact. You know, and unfortunately, after the trial and all that, the families really completely lost touch with her, with us,
yeah,
and everybody else. But what happened when Rose decided to do this story and she called me, then I kind of got rejuvenated to try to find all the family members. And I was able to actually find everybody. And one of the people I was really looking for was Tammy, because Tammy and I go back, not only is she a good friend of Nina's, but she and I actually were both at the trial and testified at the trial. So I was looking for her, and she can tell you how I found her.
Yes, because we want to know how you guys hooked up. And when you mention Rose, you're talking about Rosemary Regina Sobel, who wrote this article, which you can read, and it's beautiful, and it's eloquent, and it's at ChicagoTribune.com.
Beautiful article.
Tammy, back to you. How did you guys finally reconnect after the murders?
Well, I was away on vacation. When I got back, I was in Hawaii for about 3 weeks. When I got back, I had a whole bunch of messages on my answering machine. And one of the messages was from John Schmale, and my heart just dropped when I heard his voice. It was just bringing back, you know, everything to the forefront, 50 years. And he just left a very brief message asking me if I could call him back. And I struggled with that because I was telling my oldest daughter, I said, oh, my gosh, this is bringing back all the memories. And I really had a hard time, but I knew that I had to return the call. So I got enough courage, and my daughter was urging me. She says, Mom, please call him. You know, he needs to talk to you. You know, apparently he's also hurting. So we have, you know, to call him. So I just gathered enough strength and courage, and I gave him a call. And since then, we've been in touch.
And, John, again, I'd like to mention the women who perished in this murder in 1966. Your sister, Nina Jo Schmale, Patricia Ann Matusek, Pamela Lee Wilkening, Mary Ann Jordan, Suzanne Bridget Ferris, Valentina, how do you
Passione.
Merlita Gargulo. And Gloria Jean Davey, and there are some wonderful little bios and things that we can find out more about these victims in this fantastic article in the ChicagoTribune.com. My question to you, John, is since this article came out in the Tribune, have you reconnected with any of the families?
Well, I connected with the families before the article.
Oh, to get this information, yes.
So that's how Rose was able to contact the families. You know, if you stop and think about it, none of the families really wanted to talk to the Tribune. Nobody wanted to go back over the story again because everybody thought it was the story of Richard Speck. So I actually called each family member, found them. It was really hard to find some of them and talk to them. And like my conversation when I first started talking to Tammy was, you know, kind of like opened something up, and then we started talking and talking, and the first night we probably talked for an hour because neither one of us had ever shared this basically with our families. So Tammy and I could talk about it because we're kind of on the same page, but, you know, she will tell you she wasn't able to share it with her husband or her daughters. So it really opened up in a good way eventually that all this happened, and we all really, I think, feel so much better about it and better about our sisters and aunts and other relations.
John, what happens so sadly is that what history remembers from an event like this is the name of the person who perpetrated it, when in reality it should be the victims. Those are the names we should remember, and you're kind of out to change that a bit, aren't you?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you would go on Google and Google Nine-ish Mayo, you would see a picture of Richard Speck.
Yeah.
And we were just tired of that. And thank goodness for Rosemary Sobel and Chris Walker that they were willing to spend the time and the effort and have the talent to pull all these stories together and talk to every family member and find out who the girls really were. So it's really been remarkable, and it's the first time anybody has ever pulled these stories together.
It's really a beautiful, eloquent article, and everybody should read it in memory of these wonderful nurses. Again, they're nurses. They're training to help other people, and a terrible thing happened to them. It really is really terrible, but go read this article. It's at chicagotribune.com by Rosemary Regina Sobel. And really, we should celebrate these young nurses who were killed. You know, when you said that you really didn't discuss this with your family, I guess this would be, you know, why would you say, oh, you would have had an aunt? I guess it's kind of a weird conversation to bring up with your children.
Well, yeah, and in talking to the other family members, they all had reasons that they didn't tell their kids either, or they made up a phony story. I know one of the sisters that I talked to actually had told her kids that their aunt had been killed in an auto accident.
It's much easier to say that.
Yeah, that's acceptable. But, you know, I just really didn't want to get into it with my kids either, try to explain to them what happened to their aunt. And I think Tammy can speak for herself, but I think she had the same problem.
It's just way too painful. It was just too painful. And I don't think they would fully understand what we went through that night and the following morning. It was just something that you just didn't want to discuss because of the pain and the fear and the mixed emotions that we had. Even to this day, after 50 years, it's still, all these feelings have resurrected. And thank God that John and I can talk about it now very openly. And my girls, of course, have found out about what happened because I didn't talk about it very much at home. But they've done some research on the Internet, and they've been able to inform themselves. And I think the article that Rose wrote was the most beautiful article honoring the girls.
It's and really nice.
It's a beautiful article. I mean, she really honored them.
Tammy, did you go on to be a nurse?
Yes, I am. I'm retired now, but yes, I did. I graduated in 66, of course, and in September I went to work for the VA at the medical center, and I retired from the VA in 2001.
Good. That's so good.
Thank you for your stories, and our hearts and prayers go out to you. And I'm sure you're still suffering, but maybe you have a little bit of a smile on your face now as we remember these girls.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tammy. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, that's John Schmale and Tammy Suchoff. Incredible story.
ChicagoTribune.com. It's really worth a read. And, you know, I'm thinking it's the times, too, because 50 years ago there wasn't the Internet, and we would just find out about the killers and the bad guys. And now, if you notice, we do spend time on the victims.
Yeah,
so
it's changing a bit. That's good news. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then a lot more beyond that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We were talking to John Schmale, which people are wondering if the Schmale Road, if that's how you really say it. I don't know. There's no relation. We asked him.
Right. We asked him off air, and it's that road was in place before John's family had any renown for sad reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he says Schmale.
Yeah.
You say tomato. I mean, it's up to you. No relation, but I still am going to say Schmale Road.
I think you can.
And this is on MSN.com. It's everywhere, but the Tribune article was written by Rosemary Regina Sobel, and it's been all over Facebook. That's where I saw it. Beautiful pictures of these eight nurses that were killed at the hands of Richard Speck. And there's something in here in the article, Murder Made Richard Speck Famous. Books, documentaries, countless news stories. A 2000 film called Chicago Massacre, Richard Speck. They were dedicated to the so-called crime of the century. Meanwhile, the women he murdered were relegated to the role of victims, their names largely forgotten except by the people who love them and cannot forget.
Well, this is what's tragic about Richard Speck's case, or John Wayne Gacy's case, or Dahmer's case, Jeffrey Dahmer's case, is we, those names are ingrained in our heads forever. And it's tragic, but it's true. You'd be hard pressed to find anybody, unless you were connected with the case in some way, who remembers the victims' names. It shouldn't be that way.
No, it's, and that's what John Schmale was going on to do as this 50th anniversary approaches this July 14th, is it? He wants to, for himself and for other families, to reopen the lives of the women whose names have been overshadowed by their killers. July 14th, 1966. It's going to be 50 years.
It'll be 50 years. Now, the challenge there, and I thought you handled it beautifully, was John didn't want to focus on Richard Speck or even really give out his name. And it's hard, it's impossible to tell the story of why we're talking about this without mentioning Richard Speck's name. So you had to, and we did once or twice.
And he did, too. It does have to be mentioned, but I so agree with him. I'm confused about something that, again, we were talking about this off the air. We've never been in this position, hopefully never will.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you listening won't be either. But it's weird how many of the families, you heard John Schmale say that one of the victim's family members actually lied about the death of one of the nurses and said
it was a car crash.
It was a car accident.
Yeah. All right. Here's what, as I was hearing him say that, all I could think to myself is, because we've not been in that situation and I don't know how you handle it, it's one of those things that you go, that's the kind of thing that happens to somebody else. It doesn't happen to me, but it did. It happened to them. Is maybe that was the easiest way to accept it and to explain it and not have to dwell on it. I would want, and I think you're of the same belief, if I was in the family of somebody who met with a terrible circumstance, I'd feel very left out if I wasn't informed as to what happened at the appropriate point in my life, not as a little kid, but maybe at some point.
Oh, like you'd tell your parents, why didn't you ever tell me I had a sister and this is what happened?
Yeah. Not even a sister. I mean, certainly if it was somebody that close, but even if it was an aunt or an uncle or a relative, a cousin, something, if there was something in the family that was deep and dark like that, because I'm sure it affected the behavior of everybody in the family, I would kind of need to know that or want to know that, wouldn't you? As awful as that story is of him going through the house and killing the nurses, and it is, it's like the stuff that a horror movie is made out of. It's too weird to be real.
I know.
But I'd almost feel like I'd need to know it.
I've been accused of being the mom who offers too much information. I pretty much go through my whole life offering way too much information. You've known me a long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. You keep thinking, like, if you have kids and their sibling was murdered, you tell them.
As cruel as it sounds.
You have to. And then you get them some help, some therapy, someone to talk to.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, first of all, nothing can be kept a secret anymore with the internet. 50 years ago, they could lie about, oh, your sister or your relative got killed in a car accident.
Right.
There was no fact checking because there was no internet.
I think that all the time now when somebody commits a crime, I think because of what's gone on technology-wise, you're absolutely right.
There's no
if
hiding
somebody's
now.
Hiding a secret, you Google in their name and you look up their history and you go, oh, that's what happened. But I know it's tough because I was here. I can't imagine how gut-wrenching it must have been for all of these families to have a young relative studying to be a nurse and then they're just cut short in the prime of their life like that. But I would really feel cheated if somebody didn't explain to me what had gone on in the family.
Bunch of texts here, 773, I remember them. I graduated from high school in that neighborhood in 1966 and remember it vividly. It was such a block where my friends lived. It was such an unbelievable thing to happen. 708 says, you never forget. My brother was murdered. Very sad. I'm not saying they'll ever forget.
You can't ever forget.
No. 847, victims do that to spare children. I guess, but is it sparing them? Shouldn't you celebrate the life that was cut short and say, you know, here are some things you didn't know about your aunt or your sister?
I think that, and you obviously think that, but it hasn't touched us that way. It hasn't happened to us. So maybe when you're experiencing it, your reality is skewed a little bit.
Although 847, this was when it was. It was 50 years ago. People didn't even say the C word, cancer.
Right.
Really, no one even said, like, he's got that thing.
Yeah. It was a more guarded existence, without a doubt.
And then 608 says, nobody asks for details about car accidents, except for me and a lot of people. If you hear, like, your sibling or a relative got killed in a car accident, you'd go, oh, my God, what happened? I would need to know how, why, who hit him or her. So somebody says, nobody asks questions about car accidents, but saying my sister was murdered almost invites questions about who, how, and why. But shouldn't those questions be answered?
Well, that's tough, because at some point you go, is this any of my business to know the intricate details of what happened, especially with a murder or something? If somebody came to me and said, hey, remember Jim? And I'd go, yeah. And I'd go, what happened to Jim? And then they'd say he was murdered. I would want to know, but I'd feel out of respect for them to not ask.
But if they say murdered, if somebody says, you know, I guess, if somebody says, oh, he died, you'd go, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
But when somebody offers that up and says they were murdered, it's almost like they want you to ask. You have to ask when somebody says so-and-so was murdered.
A week and a half ago when Prince died, you were so anxious, and you, not just you, many people. I got to know what happened to Prince. How did Prince die? And for me, I'm like, well, no matter how he died, the result is the same. He's not around anymore, so it doesn't really matter. But there's plenty of people, not necessarily with celebrities, but with anybody, where they go, what exactly took place? How did that guy die? I want to know. I'm never like that. I just accept it and go, well, all right, that's what happened.
Sophomore year in high school, three friends of mine died in a private plane crash.
Yeah.
And two sets of parents. And I had to know, I mean, but we all discussed, like, oh, we wanted to know details. We were trying to come up with
theory. But what does that do once you know the details? I know it's closure, but what do you do with that?
Well, you're just human. You have an inquisitive nature, like, oh, you know, if the plane dropped so quickly, hopefully maybe they were unconscious and didn't know what happened. I mean, I don't know. These are just things that you're talking out loud to try and sort through it.
Sure.
I guess more information to me is better information, because then I can figure out things.
Yeah, I guess. But it's still speculative, because even if you're doing the math on it and going, okay, plane drop, probably unconscious, it's still, you're still guessing.
Yeah, but you it's like that's part of the healing process. You have to talk. You have to,
right.
Even though it's saying crazy things, I you know, you're just speculating and talking, but you're talking, you're communicating. You know, sophomore year in high school, friends would get together and just commiserate, because it's like,
sure,
we couldn't believe this had just happened.
Right.
And I think that's helpful to talk about it.
Oh, it definitely is. It's tricky with the details, because I don't know.
I guess, but like, I want to know all the details. I don't know why, but I'm not
the
only one.
Do you feel better, though, when you know?
Yes,
you do?
Because then I can process it in my own way, I guess.
Yeah.
It's all the pieces to the puzzle are there, and then I can try and put that all together and maybe put the puzzle, make it complete and go, okay, I've done this puzzle now. Now I can move on.
No. All right. All right.
And I don't know if it's just me, because why do you think we have 24-hour news services?
I know it's not just you, because I see the way the media, and I hate to keep dwelling on Prince, but look what happened. We're almost 2 weeks into it now, and every day it's like, we got to find out exactly why that guy isn't alive anymore. But in the end, no matter what you find out, the answer is sadly he's not coming back. He's gone.
Yeah, but now there's things coming out that he had AIDS, which I know is not true. You know, I think Us Weekly reported that.
That he was a drug addict, that he was addicted to painkillers. There's all these different versions, but once we find out, even if it's definitive 100%, this is what did it.
But aren't you going to, if there's a headline that said Prince's cause of death revealed, you're not going to click on that in a second?
Not necessarily. I mean,
really?
Yeah. I mean, if I know it, I know it. But
I cannot stop with details.
Yeah.
That is why I have so much anxiety.
I think that is why.
I have to know everything.
Right.
And I happen to know it's time to take a break.
It is. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and discuss this. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Who's this?
Lil Kim.
She's got a deep voice.
Yeah, Lil Kim.
I like her.
Yeah, she's great, isn't she?
She's definitely a baritone.
There's
Why are we playing Lil' Kim?
Because Kim Jong-un is in the news, Wendy. The other Lil' Kim.
I love the way your mind thinks. Can I tell you? It's pretty twisted.
If somebody said to me, who are your two favorite Lil' Kims? I'd go, well, Lil' Kim and then Lil' Kim Jong-un.
I wish you were a girl because you could be my twisted sister.
Oh, that would work great. Kim Jong-un has an edict for the good people of North Korea, Wendy. Do you want to hear what it is? It seems...
What is it now?
It seems a little much to me, but he, Kim Jong-un, who is the leader of North Korea, says no more weddings and no more funerals, temporarily.
How can he do that?
Because he's got a big... There's a big ceremony coming for him.
And is he getting a haircut? A great
now,
clips?
That's, you know why that's
or
mean?
Or sports clips.
Because I got my haircut to look like Kim Jong-un's, and you just insulted me.
And listeners, if you're wondering why Bill wears a baseball cap every day,
it's because I've got the un cut. I went into Borix, and I said, I want to look like this man, Kim Jong-un. And they said, that'll be an extra 50 cents. And I go, all right, I don't care. I got it on me.
You an un and a half on the side?
Yeah. Give me an un and a half. Here's the story. And I'm telling you, this is very restrictive. And I had to talk, you know, Kevin's getting married in a few months.
Oh, my God, that's coming up.
And I had to say to Kevin, don't get married in North Korea, because if Kim Jong-un just decides on a lark, he doesn't want any weddings.
Well, there goes my plans.
Right.
Out
you're
the window.
Shot. You're shot.
At least your plan of having all your groomsmen have that haircut is still intact.
That's going to be great. Isn't that going to be nice?
I would imagine the banquet costs are pretty low in North Korea.
They are very low. They're very low, Steve.
Dinner? What dinner?
Here's the story. Boy, this seems so restrictive. Tell me if you agree. All weddings and funerals have been canceled for this week in North Korea as Kim Jong-un prepares to lavishly celebrate his official coronation as leader.
How many coronations do you need?
Well, it explains there's been a process. Like, even though we here in the Western world have believed him to be the leader of North Korea, it hasn't been official until this ceremony.
And now it's going to be a fish?
Now it will be 100% a fish, as you kids say, as you young people say.
He is not adorbs.
After 4 years, now we couldn't say, if you and I had a midday show in North Korea.
We'd be dead by now.
We could not have said what you just said.
Oh, we could have, but then we would not have a show tomorrow.
Right. We would be taken off the air.
But they couldn't have our funeral.
No, not for another. We'd have to wait a week.
Well, so that would suck.
That would be the worst part of it. Right.
We better be on our best behavior.
I know. Dave Plyer would be explaining to people right now what happened to you and I and would not be pretty.
Although Kim can listen to us, Lil Kim and Kim,
yeah,
they should do a reality series.
You know who would do the news? Kim Jong-Gordon. That's not funny. What's wrong with us? That's just ridiculous.
There's a gas leak in the studio today, I'd like to tell you
all. I apologize to everybody for that.
Yeah, but they can listen at WGNradio.com, Kim and Lil Kim.
Yeah, they could listen.
Who gets top billing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I guess he does or he'd kill her.
Right. After 4 years of top-level reshuffles and purges and executions, Kim Jong-un...
That's what you want on your business card.
Yeah, that's what I've been up to lately. Kim Jong-un will formally cement his unassailable status as North Korea's supreme leader at a landmark ruling party congress this week. This is a big deal in North Korea. This is their New Year's Rockin' Eve.
Will Ryan Seacrest be there?
Yes.
To cover it?
Yes, and Kathy Griffin. The first gathering of its kind for nearly 40 years will recognize, now this part's cruel, I'm not saying this, this is in the story, will recognize the portly 33-year-old leader as the legitimate inheritor of dynastic dictatorship. I'm only reading the story from Daily Mail.
He's not that portly.
He could stand to lose, unless you're listening, Kim Jong-un, in which case you look fantastic. He's never looked better, but have said he could lose 5 pounds.
Oh, wow.
What?
He's put on a few.
He's put on some weight.
He's not that, I mean, he's not skinny, but he's not that. I've seen bigger people. Look at Buddha.
Buddha was big. That was a big guy. When the show is over, here's my plan for as soon as our show's over, I'm going to ask Seattle Sutton if she could deliver some meals to Kim Jong-un in North Korea. just to get him back in.
He will lose weight unless he's in a coma.
Right. Right. And he might be. He doesn't show a lot of expression, so we don't know if he is or not. A landmark ruling party Congress is really a coronation of sorts for Kim Jong-un, recognizing the young 33-year-old leader.
He's only 33?
33 years old. He's 33.
Okay, he looks way older than that.
But what country were you and I ruling at 33? He's done all right for himself for 33. The haircut's a problem. I'll give you the haircut's a problem.
Does he look in the mirror and say, I am loving it?
Good hair
that.
Day. I'm yeah. having a good hair day. recognizing the young 33-year-old leader as the legitimate inheritor of North Korea's dynastic dictatorship. That sounds like a phrase from Batman. The dynamic duo. Participants, Wendy, will wave flowers at the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un.
What kind of flowers? Is he a lily guy?
Oh, boy. It doesn't say here, but...
Chrysanthemum?
I could see him with the lily or a tulip, couldn't you? Or a forget-me-not, maybe?
Everybody else has it.
As they pass through Kim Il-sung Square during a mass military parade in Pyongyang in October of 2015. Well, why does it say that? That's already happened. October
where do you
of 2015.
Get your news?
This was at the top of the.
The Onion?
No. This was I go to a North Korean news website every morning, and this was their top story today. Kim Jong-un follows in the footsteps of his grandfather, Kim Il-sung, and succeeds his late father, Kim Jong-Basinger. Did you know that was his father? I didn't know that.
You could have gone grandmother.
I chose not to. The Congress means everything for Kim Jong-un, said John DeLury, a North Korean expert at Yonsei University in Seoul. It is the most public historic setting in which he can demonstrate that he is fully in charge and that everyone follows his orders. I feel bad that you and I did not get an invite, because this would have been a good party to attend. I would have flown out on my own dime. I'm a big fan.
There is a flower that they're going to be using.
Does it say what flower they use?
It's a Kim Jong-ilia. It's a flower named after Kim Jong-il.
Yeah.
So
ill, not eel.
I said it wrong.
That's what they have at the...
at the banquet?
Yeah, that's what they serve up at the banquet. Kim Jong-il. Well, hey, it's electric in here.
So isn't there a Kim Jong-unya?
Oh,
like
the,
a petunia?
Oh, the flower?
See?
Yeah, that's what they would call it.
Listen, he would not kill us now if I
right.
came up with that great idea.
He
listen,
would be
our Daddy
friend.
Had a flower, the Kim Jong-ilya.
Yep.
You need a King... Kim Jong-unya, like a petunia.
Right. Yeah, that's an easy sell.
Who do I, does he have a Twitter account? Who do I send this idea to?
I don't know if he's on, I don't know if they have the internet there in North
Just
Korea.
Use the mail.
Kim Jong-unya. Come on.
I like it. You're
this is
sell
about
me.
The time of the day where we're out of show, basically, because this is when my brainstorm sessions
don't.
Start happening on the air.
Come on.
How's it going with you and Coach Q playing tennis?
Still working on that. Still working
What
on
about
that.
Me and Keith, it's Duncan all, Keith playing Yahtzee?
Everything's going to happen. Don't you worry.
Chalmerson and Kevin's Magic the Gathering game?
That's on. Everything's on.
Kim Jong-unya.
Kim Jong-unya, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. A quick break. More show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I have to play something for you.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. What is it?
This is Kim Jong-un's favorite band.
Oh, let's hear it. What's the name of the band?
Morin Bong.
Morin Bong. They're great. I'm a big Morin. You just turned me into a big Morin Bong fan. I love these guys.
All women. I think there are 12 of them. All yeah. dressed in spangly, sparkly, glittered dresses.
Yeah.
There's a electric fiddle player.
Yeah.
Keyboardist. There's five girls up in front. I hate to tell you I like this.
This sounds all right to me. I'd go to see Morin Bong.
Well, they have a Facebook page you can follow, or Moran Bong, I guess is how we say it here.
Yeah.
Moran Bong Band. And on their Facebook page, I went there, and they haven't posted since Tax Day, April 15th, which I don't think was Tax Day in their prime.
Maybe no bans are allowed. Maybe by North Korean law, he has also banned any bands from posting anything.
This is his favorite band, though.
Yeah. But second favorite. You know what his favorite is? Kim Jung Karns, who sings Betty Davis Eyes in North Korean.
You're going to keep going,
that's
aren't you?
That's his favorite. Yeah.
I hope you have a bunch of Kims written down because the show's not
I
over
don't.
Just yet.
I don't.
You better work on it. They are pleased to announce on their Facebook page, the Moranbong Band.
Yeah.
That's hard to say. On April 15th, it was the 104th birthday anniversary of the eternal president of the republic, Kim Il-sung.
Yeah. Now, that's his grandfather? Am I getting that
I
right?
I don't know. That's what you told me.
I don't know
me.
The line of succession. I think that's his grandfather. Kim Jong-il was his dad.
And then?
And then he died, and he became the supreme ruler of North Korea. He's doing a great job.
Oh, he hasn't seen them live in action since 2013, and he's not doing a great job.
I think he's doing great. He's going to do well in the Indiana primaries later tonight. You'll see. Mark my words. He's going to pick up enough delegates.
Boy, I like this. The Moranbong
like
Band. Come on.
It sounds festive. It sounds pretty festive.
And they're beautiful girls in glitter.
Yeah.
Glittery dresses. Spangly.
Yep.
They got to be dazzler.
Do you remember, like, they put out a press release for him, for Kim Jong-un, who apparently had never golfed before and wanted to try golfing. And then they said that on his first time golfing, you know, when you go golfing, there's 18 holes. They said he had 13 holes in one. The very first time he ever golfed, he just picked up a stick and hit the ball. And 13 out of the 18 were hole-in-ones. Holes in one? Whichever.
Holes in one.
Holes in one.
He's an enigma.
I guess he is.
But who in living in North Korea disputes that?
You can't dispute it, or they'll never find you. You have whatever they say, you just got to nod and go, yeah, I guess. All right.
Okay, but why wasn't it on YouTube?
Right. There's no video of it at all.
Because you'd think that would be a perfect place to put it.
And you could fake that. You could show him standing at the tee and swinging and then cut to the hole and it goes right in the hole. You could show that.
With that sound. What would that?
I could.
Come on. You were getting yourself in the
microphone. I thought I could do it, but I can't do it. But
come
just
on.
That ball going into the cup. No, I can't. Yeah, it's like that. It's like that.
I can't really do it.
You'd hear that sound.
Wait, hang on.
And then it's in. Oh, that's beautiful.
Look out, Michael Winslow.
Right. There's a new gun in town. All right. We have to take a break. Court-ordered break. And then Ro and Anna will be by, and they will explain to us what they have coming up next. Stay here. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.